Welcome back to this week's edition of the Rock and Roll Ghost Podcast. This week we have filmmaker Zach Cregger. His new movie, Barbarian, is still in theaters. It debuted at number one. Zach, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Good. I appreciate you doing this. We've been talking way before the movie opened about doing this, so I'm glad that, that it worked out. I got to see the film last night. Finally, and I was very happy because I have to be honest, I'm not a huge horror film fan, so it takes a special kind of film for me to really like it.
Okay.
And that was the case here.
Well, I'm glad. Thank you.
Yeah. And it was the thing I liked the most about it was that it was less gory and more suspenseful. Like even at And there's going to be spoilers throughout this. It's been out. This is its fourth weekend. I feel like we can get in the spoiler. Third? Ninth? You're right. It is the third weekend. Sorry. I thought it was the third. I already thought it was the 30th. But yeah, spoilers are ahead. So, you know, at the end, when a certain person's head gets cracked open, you don't fixate on, you know, what actually happens. You can see it happening, but you don't see, you know, you don't indulge. I was wondering if that was like an actual effort to tamper down the gore or what your whole deal was with that.
You know, it's a combination of necessity. We just didn't have a budget. You know, this is a tiny, tiny $4 million movie. So we don't have the budget to do a bunch of prosthetics and effects and all of those kinds of things is it's limited. And so I really had only one take of that, you know, because the model was going to break and then we had to move. So I had to be very thoughtful about what I could realistically pull off and not try and get too ambitious, because that's how you shoot stuff that looks fake and then your movie sucks. And so, like, for example, in the opening, in the first kill, and we're solidly in spoiler territory here, so let's just say right now, if you haven't seen the movie, please, you're going to ruin it for yourself. The joy of this movie is being surprised. So stop, yes. See the movie, come back, listen to the podcast. But the first kill where, spoiler alert, Bill Skarsgård gets his head smashed to pieces. So originally, I wrote in the script and I filmed that she smashes his head into the wall and then she pulls his lower jaw out of his head and then shoves his jaw back into his eyes, like piercing his eyes with his own jawbone. And it didn't look great. It looked very fake and kind of rubbery. And obviously it was a dummy and the way he like jiggled was just like not good. So yeah. I had to cut it out. And, you know, I learned from that one. I was like, let's be more careful with the gore. And so when I rewrote Justin's death, as we were shooting, his death was originally like she wraps her hands around his throat and like his eyes and ears and nose and mouth, like blood just kind of gushes from every hole in his head. And I was like, it's just not going to look right. So let's be more restrained. And so that's what we shot.
Yeah. It was, probably my second favorite, eye gouging, head exploding, next to Blade Runner.
Blade Runner. Right.
When Roy Batty, the creator, he gouges his eyes out, and he basically, in the newer, the later versions, you can hear him crushing his head.
Yeah, that's good. You know, yeah, that's a good one. I think the best head explosion is Scanners. Not really creative to say that, but it's got to be true. There's a great eye gouge scene in Don't Breathe 2 that I think is probably better than mine, but it's great. Have you seen that one?
Which one?
Don't Breathe 2?
No, I haven't seen either of those, actually.
Oh, dude, Don't Breathe 1 is amazing. It's really good.
Yeah, horror, like I said, horror films are a weird one with me. I have to, like, I'm not sure. Honestly, I didn't see a trailer for Barbarian. I didn't read a plot line. I just, for some reason, was very intrigued by it. I guess probably because I didn't even know Justin Long was in it until later, but probably because Bill Skarsgård was involved. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, that could be interesting, you know. And then I, you know, as once it came out, I kind of saw things here and there, but I didn't really see, you know, enough to even give me an idea of actually what was happening. I didn't read a review, and, you know, I didn't read anything about it until this morning, actually.
Wow.
Because I wanted, you know, I it's hard to do nowadays, but I wanted to be as surprised as possible going into it.
Yeah, good,
and,
good.
And I was, because I didn't know what to expect. I assumed, and just like you told the Hollywood Reporter about this too, you said you wanted to have the expectations be different. So Bill Skarsgård, you think, is going to be the title of the film, The Barbarian. And it turns out he's not. He's a victim. And then Justin Long, who you always expect to be, you know, affable, a nice guy and everything, turns out to be a complete creep.
Yeah.
You know, and I love that play on conventions, actually. And it really helped to heighten the tension of what was going to happen. But that reveal when... in the cell or the tunnel when Bill is screaming that somebody bit his leg, and then the reveal of the woman down there is incredibly frightening. And
thank you.
I just gotta say, I mean, you built up something that's amazing. And you know, I again, as a non-horror fan, when it's something is done right like this, I'm even happier, because it's rare that I get surprised. Most of the time, I'm the guy in the theater laughing at horror film previews, because I just think they're fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, well, I like when people laugh at this movie. You know, even in the scary parts. You know, I've seen it a bunch of times with an audience, and there's moments that are true, just pure horror moments that gets laughs. And to me, that's kind of the best, because I think that it can be an involuntary reaction to just feeling uncomfortable. Like when she turns the corner at the bottom of the dark staircase and you just see that, like that grate, you know, that like gate, like that usually gets a big laugh, because people are just like, that's fucked, you know? And I like that reaction from people. So I'm happy for that stuff.
Yeah. And there were so many layers. I mean, you mentioned in that Hollywood Reporter thing that you kind of break the convention of, you know, introducing a new character later in the film. You also have this look back at kind of the past of the house in a certain way. And that's amazingly done. And I like I said, I was just bowled over. And
thank you.
So you said you had a limited budget. So how difficult was it to cast? I mean, you mentioned, you know, before that you've had certain people in mind, but you've rethought like the Justin Long character from being a Zac Efron type to being Justin Long in a way.
Yeah. I mean, Bill was definitely like the top choice for that role. So just got lucky with him. And for all of the obvious reasons, that he's a great actor. He has this history with every horror audience, you know, knows him as this monster. And that is going to really work towards what we're trying to do. Yeah. You know, the goal is to prejudice the audience against Bill the moment he opens the door. And with him in that role, it's done. You know, we don't have to do anything. It's done. My only direction to Bill was like, be nice. Don't be creepy ever. You stay nice. And he got it. He was on board. And so that was cool. George is like, you know, George was... I think she's relatively well known in England somewhat, but not so much in the States. So like, you know, she was, to have the lead of your movie be an unknown is, you know, kind of what you have to do as a first time filmmaker with a low budget horror movie. You know, I'm not going to get Zendaya as my lead, and that's okay. You know, I'm happy with George. She did a perfect job, and, I would work with her again in a heartbeat. She's phenomenal. So, yeah, and then Justin, like, dude, I'm just lucky that Justin responded to the material. You know, I think he'd never played a character like this. And so I think that appealed to him. And he's just such a talented guy. So I had just kind of like the perfect three for this movie. Yeah. I wouldn't change a thing. It was wonderful.
Yeah. And for people, because we didn't mention her full name, Georgina Campbell plays the lead. And you're right. She's an extreme find. I mean,
it's like, you know what it is? And I'm not comparing myself. Believe me, I would never compare myself to Jordan Peele, but I would compare, like, he found Daniel Kaluuya from a Black Mirror episode and kind of plucked him out of relative obscurity. And I found Georgina on a Black Mirror episode, you know? And I only could hope that this helps her career out. to half the degree that Daniel Kaluuya's career was off. But I mean, I think that you have to do that with a low budget first time horror movie. You've got to find that diamond in the rough, and that's definitely easier said than done. But I do believe that I did that with this. I found the right woman.
Yeah, well, she is really something, and you needed somebody like her to kind of center the film. And,
yeah.
And so, you know, if you're not buying into the person you're following,
then the movie's
not going to work.
Yeah.
And she reminded me a lot of Rosario Dawson in a way.
Sure.
For some reason, she just had that kind of openness and tough but vulnerable thing that Rosario tends to have. You know, like a. Because I remember seeing Rosario back when Kids came out.
I remember. And she popped in Kids. I was like, who's that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Her and Chloe
Sevigny. I was like, these two are amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And then she just kept getting bigger. And I hope the same for Georgina. But, well, you had a long road to get here, right? When did you complete the script and when did it start getting? You had a previous financer. When did that whole process start officially?
I wrote it in 2018. It took me 2 years to get anybody interested. So in 2020, I finally got producers that were excited, that thought it was good. So 2 years of everybody being like, no. And then we finally got financing through this French company called Logical. And they were going to give us $3.5 million to go shoot it in Bulgaria. And then on the eve of my going away to Bulgaria to start shooting, my financier died, like very suddenly. It was really tragic for so many reasons beyond my stupid little movie. But, for me, it was an especially difficult blow because, you know, not only had this guy died, but my big break evaporated. You know, it was like it was over. And so that was a Friday. And on Saturday, Roy Lee, my producer, he just like pulled a miracle out, and he got New Regency to read the movie Saturday morning, get on a Zoom with me in the afternoon, and they greenlit the movie that day. And upped my budget from $3.5 to $4.5 million.
Well, that's good. So, I mean, well, worked out.
Yeah, it was kind of a Hollywood story, you know, a terrible thing led to a positive thing for the film. And then we were off to Bulgaria to shoot. And then when I came back, I had New Regency, this amazing company, be like, hey, show us what you did. And then they liked it. And then they showed it to Disney, and then Disney liked it. And here we are. So it was just a bunch of crazy coincidences and miracles that kind of came together.
Yeah. And you said you filmed it in Bulgaria?
Mm-hmm. I filmed the interiors in Bulgaria. The block that the house is on, we built in Bulgaria. And then we did go to Detroit, and we shot in Brightmoor in the neighborhood for a lot of that stuff. And then a day in Malibu.
Okay, so here's the question I had, and I don't know if you want to reveal this or not, but you flash back to the early 80s, because they mentioned Reagan on the radio, and you see the house, same house, looking different, but you know, because they fixed up that house in the present time to be an Airbnb, but the rest of the neighborhood, you know, was completely demolished, like a lot of Detroit is. What was the magic, or how did you get the shot going back in history when there's well manicured lawns? And I mean, did you just,
Great question.
I don't really know how you pulled that off.
Okay, so that whole block we built in Bulgaria, right? So that's a street in a field. And so we erected 13 facades of ruined houses. And then we filmed all of our present day stuff first thing in our shoot. So all the ruined houses and all that stuff we filmed first. Then we went and we did all of our interiors. So the house and the basement and the tunnels and all these things. And while we were shooting the interiors, I was very careful to know exactly what I would need to see in the flashback. So I was able to tell my art team, don't worry about these, we're gonna see these five houses. And so while we were shooting interiors, they were refabbing those five ruined facades to make them look fresh as a daisy for our flashback. And then they put like sod down for grass, which died, so we had to CGI the grass. They repainted the water tower to look clean. And so then at the very end of the shoot, they'd kind of finished that process, and we went back to our street and we filmed the flashback.
That's great. That's really cool. Because I was like, I don't know what they did.
We never would have been able to do any of that in Detroit, you know?
Yeah. No, because that would have required actual
It would have been insanely expensive.
Yeah. You would have basically, the production would have owned a block of houses.
Yeah, we'd have to buy a city block and then like rebuild it. And it's crazy. It never could have happened.
Yeah. And then you shot Justin's early scene in California, I gather.
That was in Malibu, right?
Yeah, that looks like, I was going to say, I've never been, but that looked like Malibu to me.
Yeah.
What was the length of time for filming?
30 days in Bulgaria, 2 days in Detroit, 1 day in Malibu.
Oh, so very tight when you got, especially when you got back here.
Yeah.
You've done a couple of other things too. You work, you know, you and Trevor Moore did, I saw you had two films credited to you. You have Miss March and then
The Civil War on Drugs, which was a movie that we kind of just snuck into the last season of our television show. So we took the last season. We're like, we're going to shoot a full length movie and we're going to cut it into 10 pieces. And we're going to, every episode will be, the first half will be sketches and the second half will be a chapter of the Civil War on Drugs.
Oh, that's
and then
cool.
When it's over, we'll be able to scrape it into a feature film that we can just have. So that was just for our own, you know, personal enjoyment. It was never like released in theaters or anything.
Yeah, and I know you've commented that, you know, you thought you basically assumed you were in director purgatory after Miss March, but you never really, it's not like you have actually got confirmation of that, right? You didn't like
Nobody tells you that you're in director jail. People don't tell you anything.
Did you just think that it was such a failure that you didn't even you weren't putting anything out there, or
I was convinced that Miss March was such a bad movie that was so universally loathed that nobody ever wanted to hear from me again about movies. And that is not true, but I thought it was. And, you know, the fact of the matter is most movies are bad. Honestly, most movies that are produced are not good. And it doesn't really make a difference if you make a bad movie so much. Unless you've wasted a ton of money. What's that?
You know how to make a movie. You make your first movie, okay, it's not, you know, not necessarily, you know, rock the world, but you could obviously handle a production, I think.
Yeah.
You know, so
now
you
look, if Miss March had cost $50 million, you know, I would have rightfully probably been in director jail because I wasted a ton of money for somebody. But it was that was a $5 million movie again. Like, and by the way, I respect $5 million. That's a lot of money. That's more money than I had for Barbarian. But it's in the scheme of 20th Century Fox at the time, I don't think they were like angry with me like I thought they were. Like, they don't care. So, you know, it just took me a while to kind of get over myself and just realize like I'm not that important and I can write another script and people will read it and it's okay. And so, you know, it took me a long time to kind of get into that mindset, but eventually I did.
So you were just sticking to acting for until you decided to. Because you had a bunch of scripts, I know you stated, but you weren't really committed to one until Barbarian, it seems.
Yeah, there were a few others that I really liked and I tried to get made, but I couldn't. I wrote a Batman script that I still think is probably the best thing I've ever written. And one day that's I'd cool. like to make that, but I, you know, that's probably not going to happen anytime soon. When I finished Barbarian, I was like, this feels like an achievable goal. This is not a gigantic movie. It's a horror movie, and I think it's really good. So that's why I spent 2 years just tenaciously trying to get somebody to help me.
What is that process like? I mean, how you just kind of keeps? Yeah, I mean, for you, I mean, what was that like? Were you just sending it to different producers or different film financiers?
I went on Wikipedia and I looked up every horror movie that had ever been produced in the last 15 years. And I made a spreadsheet of every production company that worked on any of those movies. So I had a spreadsheet of like 50 companies. And then I went through with my agent and I was like, I called my agent. I was like, what company on this list is worth sending to? And they narrowed it down to like probably 15. And then we sent the script out to those 15. We got a couple of nibbles, you know, a couple of people liked this script, but wanted me to change everything about it that I loved, everything that I thought made Barbarian special, like the act breaks and the turns and how Justin's character is this sexual predator. They wanted to strip all of that out. And then one major studio actually offered to buy the script, but they didn't want me to direct it. They wanted to assign a director of their choosing, and I wasn't going to do that.
Well, because then they would have just gone and done what the other ones.
They probably would have changed it, and it probably would have come out with some totally unrecognizable movie, or probably, honestly, never would have gotten made.
Right.
So, yeah, all of that. I had a producer come on board and attach, and he gave me these notes, and I addressed the notes, and when I sent him back my, you know, very labor-intensive rewrite, he just never responded to me again. He just ghosted me. You know, so that hurt. And I just had a lot of stuff like that. You know, it's hard, man. And I totally understand how writers who can get demoralized and quit, you know. But I just, for this script, I was just like, I'm going to be psychotic. I'm just going to be a total psychopath. And I will just, if I have to sell my house and like go into debt and shoot this movie for, you know, a shoestring, then I'll try it, you know. So it was just one of those things, you know, for me, where I if I hadn't got it made at this point here now today, I'd probably still be trying.
Yeah Well, no, I admire your perseverance, because
thank you.
Or perseverance, I can't believe I mispronounced that, but yeah, perseverance, because it worked. Where are you at now? Are you developing something now? I mean, have the offers started to come in, because it's debuted?
The offers have started to come in. That's fun. You know, I've gotten a lot of scripts sent to me, and you know, it's flattering, but I do think that my next movie should probably be something I write. So I'm going to go, I'm in the middle of writing two scripts right now. And it's been really hard to write lately with all of the kind of, you know, excitement that I've been having over the last couple of weeks. But I'm going to go soon. I'm going to go out of town, and I'm going to just, you know, hunker down and really try and write something and get it done. And hopefully that'll be what I do next.
Yeah. So what has the last several weeks been like for you? Are people like calling your agent and asking to take you out for lunch and all that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's great. I like that. You know, I've had plenty of people that I really respect and admire have like reached out cold and said nice things about the movie. And you know, I'm gonna have lunch with my horror idol next week, and I won't get into who that is, but like people could probably guess. I am going to be, I'm just going to be in a new position now that I've never been in before. And you know, that is very gratifying, but it also comes with a lot of pressure of like, how could I maintain the level of quality that I believe I established with Barbarian? You know, I'm very proud of that movie, and I think it's a special movie, and I want to continue to make movies that feel that special. And so, so that's hard. I hope I'm able to.
Yeah, no, I think that's, you know, I think you've got the right attitude for it, because, you know, it could not last theoretically.
Sure. Oh, well, it's certain. That's one thing we all know, right? It won't last. Nothing. You know, nobody lasts in Hollywood.
Yeah.
So I have to let that in first and foremost, is that this is a moment, you know.
Right.
In like 2 weeks, Smile's going to come out, and that's going to be the number one horror movie in the country. And then that'll be it. And that's okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, you it's interesting you brought that up. This year has been, I've been more intrigued by horror this year than most, which isn't saying a lot when my list is like five horror films. It's X, Pearl.
X is fantastic.
Yeah. And then Smile really grabbed me as a trailer too. When they put a teaser out, I think they put it out in front of Nope.
Mm-hmm.
And that really intrigued me. So there's, for me, this seems like it'd be a pretty solid year for horror. In fact, I don't know if you saw it, but Martin Scorsese just lavished praise on Pearl.
Yeah, well, I know Martin Scorsese is a huge fan of Ty West, and deservedly so. I mean, I think he loved The Innkeepers. I think Martin Scorsese famously loves The Innkeepers, which I think is awesome. My wife is the star of that movie, so I say, yeah, awesome. Cool. He has good taste.
I'll have to check that out.
And Ty has delivered. You know, House of the Devil is excellent. X is excellent. I haven't seen Pearl yet, but I mean, from everything I'm told, it's great. So yeah. Like, I love, I want all of these horror movies to do well. I want Smile to crush. I want Pearl to crush. I want, you know, because I want to make another horror movie and I want it to be in a theater. And the only way that studios are going to be comfortable putting horror movies in theater like they're doing right now is if they do well, you know. So I think a rising tide kind of lifts all boats, and I'm really excited to be discussed with in the same sort of articles as Ty, and that's awesome. So like I'm thrilled that this is happening. And by the way, another great one that came out this year was Watcher by Chloe Okuno. I don't know if you saw that, but that's a great
an artist friend of mine recommended that on Facebook, and that's been on my list.
Yeah, watch that one.
Yeah. I think it might be on one of my streaming systems. I've got, I don't know how many damn streamers.
It's, you can stream that. I think I streamed it. Yeah.
What was I going to say? I'm blanking. Well, you know, I did want to ask, because we don't have much more time, but what inspired you to become a filmmaker? I mean, you've been acting for a long time, but what was it that made you want to actually make the movies yourself, write and direct?
When I was 6 years old, there was this movie on the Disney Channel called The Black Arrow that no one has ever seen, and it doesn't matter. But it's like kind of a Robin Hood sort of a movie. And I remember after I watched the movie, which I thought was fine, there was a behind the scenes documentary like special about the making of Black Arrow. And I remember that there was this one moment where it was like, they were showing you how they made it look like someone got shot with an arrow. And so the camera is like on this guy with a bow and arrow, and then he lets it go. And then the camera whip pans over and the actor already has an arrow in his chest. But when the camera lands on him, he goes like and he acts like he just got shot with an arrow. And I remember seeing behind the curtain and seeing how they did that, like really, really did something in my brain where I felt like I was learning a magic trick. And I was like, I know a secret about that scene. And I was more fascinated with the behind the scenes of a lot of movies than I was with the movie themselves. And I had to consume everything I could about how movies were made. I was like 6 years old. So I wanted to make movies with my friends. I wanted to like pretend I was in a movie rather than pretend I was a superhero. I wanted to pretend I was an actor playing a superhero in a movie. You know, I was into that stuff. And then when I saw Raising Arizona, the cold open of Raising Arizona is like the camera work in that movie blew my mind. And it made me like almost like, it was like a spiritual experience watching that movie. It really was. It was like listening to like the best Radiohead song climaxing for like, you know, 10 minutes. And that moment I was like, I have to do this with my life. So I give the Coen brothers a lot of props.
That movie was insane, because I think they just, I don't know if they described it as, or if the critics did, but at the time it was like a Warner Brothers cartoon, but live action.
Yeah.
Because it was absolutely insane.
Yeah, and Evil Dead 2, it's kind of the same energy. Movies kind of are twins in my head. They both work, you know, they're very close collaborators, Raimi and those guys, and they released those movies around the same time, and they both were just so joyful and energetic and just radical to me. And I love them.
Yeah, no, that you hit it on the head there, because the Evil Dead 2 is one of the ones that I saw back then. And the 80s has a lot of, you know, horror films that people talk about, but Evil Dead 2 really stands out as one that really got me. So
yeah, it's probably my favorite. I just think it's really a magical movie.
Yeah. Well, Zach, I really appreciate you taking the time today. It's good to be able to talk to you. And again, I mean, you just really just killed it with Barbarian.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
I really hope people keep going to see it in the theater before, you know, and then, you know, they buy it, they rent it, the whole business. And I'm really eager to see what the next film is you're going to do.
Well, thank you. I'm eager to see it myself. I don't know what it'll be, but you know, I hope it's good. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, no, thank you. And you have a great rest of your day.
All right. You too. Cheers.
All right. Bye.
Bye.